podcast was a mess.
All right, welcome back to the Wildlife Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dallas Ingram, and I'm here with your other host, Jess McGuire. And we're going to try something new this week and are going to be recording for YouTube. So,
dreading this.
Yeah, so bear with us. One, I've got to learn the new technology, and two, neither one of us want to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
But
we've been told it's necessary.
Yes. So many people.
Kenny.
Yes, Kenny. We're going to talk ugly about you. So because we're learning something new, we decided let's just do something simple and fun, something we've talked about doing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Our, what we're going to call our hot sheets.
Yes.
You want to give a background on why we're calling this hot sheets?
Well, I'm hoping everybody knows what Hot Sheets is referencing. It's Men in Black, you know, one of the greatest movies put together. It's a treasure. Yes.
Going and checking out the hot sheets.
It's the hot sheets, so it's the tabloids, but that's where they get the real alien information from.
Yep. So yeah.
This is like the hot sheets of wildlife, because there's a lot of bogus information out there being shared.
Yep.
It gets pretty infuriating sometimes.
Yeah, we're going to start with the bogus stuff, and then we're going to just, I think we're going to hit some bizarre stories that were just some crazy stuff we run across lately. And see how that comes together.
Dallas, I have a question for you.
All right.
Why do scientists think hummingbirds hum?
Because they don't know the tune?
They can't remember the words.
That's it.
That's not valid.
We need to get all of our puns together for the next one.
I thought this was the appropriate time.
It was. Mm-hmm. With the hot sheets.
Yeah.
All right. So we want to start with one that caused a bit of a stir with some of our folks that we work with. When it first came out, and that was a quail being released in New York to combat ticks.
Yes, yes.
And this is coming on the heels of several years ago, I think they released turkeys to eat ticks. And so now they've decided that
quail. So here with possum.
Yes. So you know, we want to talk about the quail and then we'll go into the possums. I love the caption underneath this photo of quail in the hand. It says, quail are being released into Brookhaven State Park to go big feasting on ticks.
Excellent.
Big feasting. So that was kind of entertaining. But the guy went in and his, I guess, justification for releasing quail was they did a survey, one of those population, you know, look for everything surveys that they do periodically. And what they call them is lost, just left me. But, and one thing that he did not see this time that they saw back in, I guess, the 70s or 80s, whenever the last time they did this survey was, there were no quail. Well, now we have ticks. We don't have quail, so then that means that quail eat ticks, and if we brought quail back, then we wouldn't have ticks.
One of my favorite things is correlation does not equal causation.
Thank you very much.
Yep. I mean, yes, we need quail there, but...
Yeah. But that wasn't we're not going to talk about, we haven't probably set fire to anything in that area in the same time period, which is why we have no quail.
We've concentrated wildlife due to houses and development there.
Right. We created a lot of deer habitat and we don't hunt deer. And now we have a whole bunch of ticks. So
they don't manage it at all.
Right. Yeah. So that was interesting. He went through talking about how, quail ate ticks, and there was no study to show that they did eat ticks because all the diet studies I've ever seen with quail, I don't really ever
see man.
Ticks.
And you and I have read a lot of studies about quail and opened up a lot of crops. You much more than me, unfortunately.
I have found a small crawfish and grasshoppers and other things, but never a tick.
Yeah, and as a hard-bodied insect, or not insect, but you know what I mean, a hard-bodied food item, it's going to pass through. You're going to see some evidence. And both of us have, for the viewers that don't know, both of us have pretty significant previous life experience with ticks, tick identification and squashing for molecular purposes. And
all the nasties.
Yeah, never.
Yeah.
Even spider legs make it through sometimes.
I mean, it's just something that, you know, you would see, even, you know, especially in the crop, because mm-hmm. it hasn't gone through the digestive process yet.
That's
so
right.
You should be able to see that sort of thing. But, and just, you know, reading studies of people who sat down and look at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these and, you know, sit down and under a microscope and look at what all these are, mm-hmm. that ticks don't really show up as a big item. And then the guy was talking about how he was wanting, you know, funding to be able to do this and couldn't get funding and couldn't figure out why, because mm-hmm. he didn't, you know, people just, they wanted data to show that this was going to work. And he doesn't have the data because it doesn't work. Not to mention that releasing a whole bunch of little pin-reared birds, they're not going to survive long enough to eat a whole lot of ticks.
That's right. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, that was, that took a lot of my time over the last couple months, I guess. It's been out a couple months now with people calling and asking me what my thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I went around through our crew. Was like, did you see this? Oh, my God. So it just drove everybody a little bit crazy. But I guess, two to follow up is another misnomer is that possums mm-hmm. are big consumers of ticks.
Yeah. And I mean, I loved the motivation for it, and it did bring a lot of positive light to possums, which we consider, you know, one of the many trash species mesomammals out there. They cause a lot of harm out there, and they're not exactly cute. People don't like them. So, you know, any effort to recognize that any animal has value is important, and I'm all for it, but not when it's not scientifically driven. And the studies that it was based on was literally like possums trapped in a research situation where their only, I believe their only food source was ticks. Now, I might be being bad and misremembering,
but it wasn't
the
a whole
papers,
lot of
but there
variety.
Weren't options.
Yeah,
like,
there wasn't a lot of variety.
So they were forced to eat a lot. And like any animal that's stressed, especially we know in research situations, raccoons, rats, possums will gorge themselves on anything that's put in front of them if given the opportunity. That's like what we do. That's why we do fat research on those studies, on those animals. So I don't know. It's just when you start asking them, what are the background papers on this? You know, because if you see it in everyday popular press, you know, we don't see, you don't cite the scientific papers often because they don't expect a layperson to go and say, hey, where's the science? But I think we need to give people a lot more credit, because I'm loving seeing some of the Facebook threads on this and other social media threads asking, where's the data? You know, can you link the paper? And it's just not there. And I think I've gotten blocked or kicked out of a couple groups now because you can't show us any data.
Right.
Like, I love possums, but I just...
Yeah. I think if COVID did one thing that's caused people to go, okay, where's the data on this? And we want to see proof, and for good and bad. But yeah, it's not there. And like you mentioned, you put animals in a certain situation, they'll eat pretty much anything. We see that when you have deer in an area that's extremely overpopulated. And I've worked on a couple of properties that were high fence situations. So it's basically like putting them in a lab, and you throw a bunch of deer in, and then they eat everything that's good for them to eat and that they enjoy. Then they go eating other stuff. And so in different situations, I've had people come up and go, well, you know, they're eating all the sweet gum, and, you know, so that's good for deer. No,
they're forced to.
Yeah, there's nothing left for them to eat. If they're eating sweet gum, you've got too many deer. And then I had one that's like, well, my deer, it's just the craziest thing I've ever seen. They're over here eating, every time we get new shoots off a China berry, they're eating them down.
Yeah.
After you just told me you didn't have too many deer. So if you have deer eating China berry shoots, you have too many deer. Nothing eats China berry.
You see that browse line?
It's just, you know, defined.
Well, my favorite is when, I think, I don't know if you were there, but we were doing a field day, and one of the stops was pine straw raking area. And, you know, you have a lot of people that will, and we've seen, speaking of hot sheets, we've seen some stuff come along on the internet saying that, you know, it can be good for, you know, it's forestry, it's forest. So of course it's good for wildlife. I see deer in it all the time. I see quail in it. I see turkey. Yes, they're probably passing through.
Yep.
No, I've seen deer eating in there. And I'm like, okay, next time you see a deer in there eating, watch their behavior. I guarantee you they are pawing and nuzzling through, looking for that one thing that's grown up because
got enough little sunlight.
Yeah, there's a little bit of sun that consistently comes through, and that one little seed was able to, you know, make its way through.
Mushrooms.
Yeah. So I'm like,
they're not eating the pine straw.
Yeah.
And again, like I tell them, for quail and turkey, some of those species, yeah, you see them, but guess what? So do all the predators.
That's right.
And so they don't really want to be in there. It's passing through from one end to the other. They don't need mm-hmm. to be in there from a predatory yeah. standpoint.
Yeah, I always see that mentioned on one of our favorite forums that, you know, it's fine.
They want all this overgrown stuff and, you know.
Yeah.
So some other things that were, I guess that was the main ones that we talked about that were just completely wrong.
Yeah.
Some other things that were interesting that came up recently, and they were all over the news, was the cocaine sharks. You can't have them there. So cocaine sharks. I think they're even making a movie on cocaine sharks, weren't they? Or somebody was talking about doing one on this now.
I don't know. I think there's cocaine sharks, cocaine bear or something. Yeah. Was the thing.
Yeah, there was.
And I'm going to admit, I just turned that noise off because I don't have time or the mental capacity to embrace that right now.
It was quite entertaining because the cocaine bear thing came up, and this was a bear that supposedly got into a stash somewhere. But the sharks.
Wasn't it on Netflix or something?
Yes, it was.
I'm gonna look that up.
You're gonna Google it?
Yeah, go. Tell me about the sharks. I don't know much
because
about
the shark one was in. It was actually sharks absorbing cocaine from the water. So the drug trafficking is so bad in some of these areas, and then the use of it coming through the sewage and in the rivers. So it's these tidal sharks, those who are really close in to the shoreline. They're smaller. They call them sharp-nosed sharks. And so they took a lot of them, did some blood tests, and they tested positive for trace of cocaine.
That's terrible. Yeah, cocaine bear is rated R. Sorry for our younger, but you won't get to watch it. Horror comedy. A whole hour and 35 minutes was dedicated to this. And it doesn't look like it's on Netflix.
Not yet. So. Oh, well.
Man.
It'll be, you know, snakes on a plane, cocaine bears. Next, it'll be cocaine sharks, which has some truth to it. And they're talking about, you know, the amount of cocaine packs they find floating in the ocean. They're worried about that and how it's toxic to mollusks and crustaceans and some of the bony fish. So if you're finding it in trace levels of sharp-nosed sharks, are we getting cross-contamination? What's it doing to people and all the rest of the ecosystem? So, don't be leaving your cocaine floating in the ocean.
I was going to say, what beaches is this most?
It's right Brazil.
You go there for a little while and have an excuse for a few months.
So that's a little bit of a...
don't get drug tested after going to that beach is the...
retirement plan.
Yeah. I can't believe that, you know, I'm stuck on this cocaine bear.
But it was quite funny. I've heard people talk about it.
I mean, you can Google the true story. Meet the real cocaine bear.
Yeah.
Where is he now?
So I understood that he did not go as berserk as the movie kind of made it. Of course, they're going to expand.
Oh, he now resides in the Kentucky Fun Mall. And he doesn't look like he's having fun anymore.
So kids, let this be a lesson to you. Don't eat cocaine. And
we're going to get canceled before we even get started. Brought it up.
I did. I started it. The next one was, we'll go to something a little less controversial, I guess. The mass gator gatherings in the Okefenokee Swamp.
Oh, yes.
And this comes up every couple of years. Mm-hmm. I remember 5 or 6 years ago, there was a big one. And it seems to be every time you have a little bit of a drought situation because Okefenokee is not very deep.
No, and it's so encroached on.
Yep.
Yep.
So the water levels drop pretty quickly. And so, one, gators go to those areas where you have water, but two, so do all the fish and the food sources. And so they think that is the reason that it's not cocaine gators.
But have you seen some of the videos of people like kayaking in and canoeing in? Out of your minds.
Yes.
Like,
if I came up on
this, who would
ever
think that was a good idea?
Because gators do not like kayaks.
No, no. And you're like, have a ton in one area. Manatee, now we're feeling comfortable, but I'll get attacked by a manatee.
Cute.
But
a whole bunch of teeth.
I couldn't even watch all of the videos all the way through. That's another thing. People were sending me a lot of those, like, because they know we have gators at our place. And I'm like,
I see that as a Darwin Award thing.
100%.
And it's just, you know, we're going to get that out of the gene pool.
Yeah.
If you're not smart enough to take a kayak.
But they got a lot of views. So maybe, wait, where's this? Wait, do we need to go do this setup?
We can get our more views up.
Yeah. No.
It's that retirement plan.
Right? No, it's a totally cyclical thing. And there's some great educational spots. You know, you've got the bad parts of social media, but there's been some really good stuff. If you Google it, you can find some excellent rangers getting on there and explaining why it happens.
Yep.
But it ultimately leads to being a sad story as to why some of this happens.
And, you know, it would have happened in extreme drought situations. It's just, there's nothing crazy going on. It's not critters taking over the world and things going crazy. Which is what a lot of people were trying to sensationalize.
That's just what you want us to believe.
Yeah.
That there isn't this mass takeover coming.
It's the aliens.
Yes. Hence the hot sheets.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So another thing that I had, and when I was looking at the gator thing, this popped up, was at Sequoia and Kings National Park. I thought it was kind of funny, is that the marmots are so bad out there. They've gone rogue, and they will get in your car and chew out the hoses and all your wires. And so when you get back in your car, you may not be able to go anywhere.
Are they going after like the antifreeze or something?
Just anything that's got plastic and wiring on it. That, I don't know. They like all of that good stuff. And
just mayhem.
Yeah. So between spring and midsummer, if you're visiting one of those parks, they're recommending that you park your car on a tarp and basically wrap your car up so they can't get in the undercarriage. They recommended you do this with chicken wire.
I would go for the chicken wire because, I mean, I'm sorry, but if an animal is getting, like, putting that much destruction on your car while you're hiking, they sure won't be stopped by, hey, puppers, they sure won't be stopped by
a tarp. That's what I'm thinking. They're going to chew through the tarp if they're going to chew through my hoses and my
wiring. I mean, your dog just walked in and my GSP has gone through, like, two tarps now when we cover the grain.
Yep.
So, yeah.
The chicken wire... But who runs around with chicken wire? Enough chicken wire to wrap the undercarriage of your car. And I mean, that's a paint scratcher.
I mean, that's...
Travis would have a stroke.
Well, what's your dedication to hiking? I mean, sacrifices must be made.
Don't go between spring and midsummer unless you check your car. But they also mentioned that in a lot of those areas, they have marmots. Make sure you're checking your vehicle before you leave, because they had a marmot who took a 600-mile, 10-hour ride...
I think I'd be okay with that. Come on, little buddy.
You went from Colorado to Arizona.
That's it.
And it was one that they had tagged.
Mm.
It was part of a study of this little marmot population. And somebody saw this marmot running around in a parking lot trying to figure out where the heck she was. And they got down there and they trapped her and took her back home. Mm. But apparently she's been known to stow away. It had just never traveled quite that far yet.
That's funny. You know, you think about worrying about bears. You know, making sure your car doesn't have anything so a bear gets in. But it reminds me, so for some of my undergrad research, I was lucky enough to volunteer at the zoo, and I was interested in animal behavior, had to have a senior thesis. So I worked with the Kea parrot at the zoo, and, you know, researching, they're very intelligent, and they are like mass mayhem to the hikers there, because they will tear everything off the car.
Yep.
They like all the plastic that hold in your windshield. You come back and it's gone.
Yep. I've heard of buzzards doing that a lot of times too, is taking out people's windshields and the edge of their frame on their tractors and stuff. And
because
they come in. I don't know what it is about the birds and all that stuff, but
they're taking over.
Yep.
You know, Hitchcock was onto something.
That's right. The birds.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the marmots are in cahoots.
Nice.
So,
I mean, you just promised us not too long ago that there was no takeover happening, but so far,
all
evidence is pointing to a takeover.
Gosh. Well, if we want to get back at the birds, one of the next stories that was also popping up was why birds don't get electrocuted when they are on power lines.
I was thinking about this the other day when I was driving down the road.
Yeah, because we see one every now and then get electrocuted, but they're not grounded. So if we could get up there and perch on a wire and hold on and not touch anything else, we wouldn't get electrocuted either. But if we touch the next wire or you touch the pole or whatever, then it grounds you and then you're fried. It said, 0.9 to 11.6 million birds per year get electrocuted. So
dang, That's a lot.
That's a lot of birds. So it's mainly larger birds.
They're obviously not avoiding it as much as I thought.
No, they're not. We have a spot on a pole down from the house that after the hurricane, I think there's something that's not quite right. Because when the wind blows, you know, our power will sometimes go out. And we find some of those little herons and stuff fried every now and then right under that pole.
That's sad.
And you'll see it arc every once in a while. Little feathers go everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like, oh, there goes another one.
Lovely.
So if you want to get back at the birds, if they're trying to take over, I guess you just figure out a way to get them grounded when they land on
So Calvin, my 9-year-old, we were, you know, he's very inquisitive, as is the other one. We were talking about this because they saw a squirrel going across a line over the road, and they thought that was hilarious. But, you know, they were asking,
how does he not get shot?
Yeah, and asking about the birds, too, and I was just like,
they're not grounded, so if they do touch the wrong thing in the wrong combination, then that's the end of it. Apparently, 11.6 million of them have access every year.
That's more than I am.
So your large raptors and herons and things seem to be the bigger issue. But
so that's even more reason that put stuff underground. Or one more thing birds have to worry about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Turbines and electrical wires and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so this next story is basically about a basking shark that they had fitted. They had several basking sharks, which are really cool critters. And they put a camera on it, and it was one of those cameras that was made to pop off after a certain amount of time. They retrieved the camera, get the footage to see, you know, some information, because not a lot's known about these guys. And they start looking at the video footage, and all of a sudden they see the shark kind of do this little quick jerk in the bow of a boat. Come across its back.
Oh.
And the shark immediately dives really deep and stays down on the bottom for a long period of time. So it changed his behavior because he sat down there for, you know, for hours after that. Mm. And they could see a cut and even paint from the bow of the boat down his back. It didn't cause any bleeding. It definitely impacted his behavior. And again, this is, you know, an injury to this animal, and shows you the problems with manatees and sharks and a lot of these animals who sit kind of just under the water. And yeah, he was a 23-foot basking shark.
Well, I don't think you can find a manatee anymore without scars on its back.
No, And that's just, it's pretty neat that they were following around with the camera footage. And you can even see it. They've got the footage online where you can see the boat come across. And I'm just glad that he survived. But somewhere near Ireland, I think, is where this one was. But that was the first ever time they've recorded one being struck. So, kind of interesting, all the technology that's out there now allows to see some of the things that are happening. But
it's kind of depressing.
It is. I see. That's one of those.
Why are you telling me this right now?
Well, you wonder why the animals are rebelling.
I guess, yes. Yeah. We're getting at our causation.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So, the last little article I have was one I think you shared with me a while back that I thought was very interesting. How some of the African elephants are developing tusklessness. So they're losing their tusk because of ivory poaching, basically is what it comes down to. So it's a sex-linked trait. So you're mainly seeing it in the females. And the majority or large portion of them, I'd have to go back and remember how many it was now. Up to 50% of the females now do not have tusks.
Yeah, because they're selecting for animals that don't have high-quality tusks.
Yeah.
So they're taking out all the good tusked elephants and pass it so they can't pass down those genes. It's kind of like the same concept of deer and high-quality racks. If you take out all your bucks before they go, you don't pass it on.
And apparently it's a low prevalency trait that they see in populations all across Africa and different species of elephants is that every now and then you have an elephant that's born that has no tusk. And so when you have ivory poachers who are coming in for 20 years during this war they were having in this area, and they're harvesting these elephants with tusks, what's left to breed are the females who have that trait and carry that trait.
It's affecting their fitness.
Yeah.
Because they don't have as many food choices anymore, and They, you know, because they use their tusks as tools. It's yeah, not they just for stuff. Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other bad thing is it's also a male lethal trait because it's an X chromosome linked. You get the two of those, or you get that right chromosome in a male, then it's most of the time it's going to be lethal. So if they get it, a tuskless male is not going to survive 99% of the time. So you're going to see less males showing up in the population, which is going to affect reproduction long term. And then those that do survive are tusked elephants, and then that opens them up to poaching predation. So you're compounding the issue there, and so that population is just going to really start to dwindle.
Yep.
So that is sad.
It kind of reminds me of some of the evidence that points to rattlesnakes losing the behavior to rattle.
Right.
So, you know, rattles seem to be, you know, not as prevalent as much anymore. You know, the research is still very much new on that. And a lot of it's just anecdotal.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many rattlesnakes I've walked past that we never heard or saw. And I know that because I've been part of telemetry studies that, you know, you don't see them. So maybe now that we're looking at it, we're going to find that it's something completely normal. But it is looking very
well, there's
like we're impacting.
A cricket in Hawaii that a large portion of the population does not chirp because there's a parasitic wasp or something that listens for that chirping. So there's other species of crickets that they kind of, that cricket kind of, or one of the few in their species that chirps. And when they bring the females in, they just kind of sit back and wait and let that male get parasitized. And then they breed with the female that he's drawn in. So that was years ago that I saw that one.
Was that an introduced wasp?
I'm kind of wondering if he was. I can't remember because I should have went back and looked that one up. But I just remember that that was interesting, that that behavior changed really quickly and that it caused him to no longer do the chirping. He just, there were some sacrificial crickets that did the chirping and drew the ladies in. And they paid for showing off to the ladies by getting parasitized. So.
Yeah, let that be a lesson.
That's right.
Don't need show offs.
That's right.
No peacocking.
Nope. But the threefold increase in frequency for these tuskless females was very interesting and happened in a very short time period. You know, we talk about evolution happening under long time periods, but this, you know, in 20 years, they've seen this threefold increase.
Mm-hmm.
All because of people
doing
stupid things. So
There's
a lot of the genetic stuff that went into that paper that I'm not going to get into, but I thought that was an interesting thing to see that... The ecosystem, like you said, not just the elephants eating, but they're wanting to see the return of those tusked animals because of what they do with the ecosystem that affects a lot of other species, plants and animals as well. Because like you said, how they manipulate it when they're looking for food, pushing things over, you know, digging around with those tusks. It's not just a showy thing.
Yeah. And shout out to the zookeepers at the Memphis Zoo during their elephant program. We learned about that and the boys wanted to learn more, and I didn't have the answers, so I went and found the paper.
That's pretty cool. So seed zoos provide a lot of good things for us and allow people to see that and learn about animals they normally wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff out there.
Yeah.
Zombie ants and...
Yeah. We could go on and on. We'll make this one a short one this time.
But like the moral of all this, though, is to check the sources.
Yeah.
You know, ask for the papers, get kicked out of groups.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say that the moral was that the animals are out to get us.
Well, that's your moral. That's your conclusion. My conclusion is to ask more questions.
No, it really, you know, it's not always as it seems, and the internet's not always correct, as Abraham Lincoln said. Everything you read on the internet's correct, right?
Yes, that's right. Yes.
I hope everybody gets that, but okay. We'll just leave it at that, and... Yeah. Hey, this is a short one as we're learning the YouTube thing. If you normally listen to us, check us out on YouTube and hopefully we'll be able to keep this rolling moving forward. I'll say this today. I'm hoping this will show up on YouTube if everything works out. So if you're listening to this and then you don't find it on YouTube, it's because I couldn't get the video to work.
Yeah. And also seagulls don't like to be stared at.
Why is that?
That's all I have.
That's all you have?
Yeah. Okay. Just don't stare at seagulls. I would say don't call them gulls, but
okay,
it was on the internet, so that's what
you're going to... Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to leave it with that.
You said it was a mess. I'm making it
a mess. As Calvin says, this podcast is a mess.
It is a mess.
Well, thank you all for joining us, and follow us on whichever platform you listen on, or like us on the YouTube if we get this going.
Mm-hmm. Facebook.
We're Wildlife Her on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Send us any messages, and we appreciate it.
We hear from you. We might send you a sticker.
Yeah. We have some really cool stickers. Mm-hmm. I don't have mine with me right now. You have yours. Mm-hmm. See? Good sticker.
Yeah.
All right. And until next time, we appreciate it. Thank you.